Okay, this is Pesach 57:78. We're going to talk about Echa Miyodea. So we all know this song. It's at the very end of the Seder. Echa Miyodea, Echa Niyodea, Echa Elokein Shabashmai Va'aretz, right? One is a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the heaven and the earth, and it goes on, etc. So the question is, what is the song doing here? It's such a strange song because it's a little kid's song. It's a little kid's song that goes all the way through, and everybody's like, you're dead tired at the end of the Seder. No kids are up, and if they are up, I don't think they want to count. So what are we doing? Why are we saying Echa Miyodea at the very, very end of the Seder? So Rav Yitzchak Sender, in the commentators, that's Sal, I should say, he just passed away this year, and the commentators, I've got a quote from Shlomo Aaron Wertheimer, and he's Hakdama to this piyut, and he says that the author of this bit of poetry, this liturgy that goes through, is unfortunately we have no idea. The period in which it was written, we have absolutely no idea. We have no idea what the connection is to the Seder itself. In fact, in old manuscripts of the Haggadah, it seems that at the very end of the Seder, they wrote Shema Yisrael Shema Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and then they said Echad Miyodeh, as if it was connected to Shema. It makes sense why Shema would be there, because at the end of the Seder, they have to make sure they said Shema in the proper time, because it's possible when they said Shema earlier, it was at an earlier time, and they weren't Yotzei their Kriya Shema in the Zmano of Lila. So it's possible that's the reason why. But then to connect it to Echad Miyodea, it's as if to say that they skipped out of Yahafta, Eis, and everything else. What in the world is the connection over here, and what do we have to do over here? At some point, something has to go through. So this song only goes up to the number 13. So this is something that we have to work on as well. It's not that we don't have anything to represent 14. Like if I would say Arba Yodea, like if we said Arba Asrei Miyodea, Arba, no one. That's not how this song ends, right? That would be a horrible ending to any song. Obviously, there's something that would be 14, but why 13? So the Pe'er Aron, who's a sefer that was written about 150 years ago, says Echad is a gematria of 13. So therefore, 13 leads back to 1. So it's almost like a full circle. It comes full circle. You go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, etc. up until 13. And then 13 leads back to Echad, so you have a place to stop. You would have asked that if you ended by 14. You would have asked it by 15. But at least 13 has a stopping point because it goes back to Echad and it goes all the way through. It's the same thing in Gematria. The same way that Aleph is 1 and Bez is 2 is Gimel is 3, etc. And if you go up, Tuf is 400. Chaf Sofis is 500, right? Everybody knows that it goes on. Mem Sofis is 600. Nun Sofis is 700, right? Pei Sofis is 800. Sadi Sofis is 900. And then Eleph is 1,000. You get it? It like starts over, and then Elef is 1,000. You ever notice that? That in the years, it's Hey Tav Shanayin Ches. Why is it Hey Tav Shanayin Ches? It's like cute, right? Just throw a 5 inside, then that's good. Because Hey can also be 5,000. Because if you go around the second time around, Hey is 5,000. You'll get that. That's how it goes with Aleph to Elef. So too, it's a way to be able to go from one to the other. Revelio Kitov, he wrote that the Kitov, you know, those three books, the blue and white books, you know what I'm talking about? I forgot what they're called.
Is that Maxwell House
Haggadah? No, not the Maxwell House Haggadah. It's the thing that goes through the months of the year, and it goes, it's the Kitov books. It's like blue and white heritage, the book of our heritage. Book of our heritage, right? That's good. Somebody that's watching right now is like, the book of our heritage! Like wondering. But it is. It's the book of our heritage right there. It seems from many Haggadahs, from his especially, that this number is not arbitrary, but it's based on the 10 Makos plus Tzitzah Hadash Biachav, that somehow the number 13 has a major role in this Seder itself, although we don't fully understand that, and that major role includes the fact that the number 13 is there. So 13 specifically comes from the Ten Commandments plus that Tzitzah Hadash V'Achav. It's Shayach by those 13, so we specifically mentioned 13. But we still haven't answered what Echa Miyodea is doing. So the Midrashim lists a bunch of Schusim that we had leaving Mitzrayim. Anybody know his Schus? What was our Schus? Our Schus to leave Mitzrayim was what? What do we do according to the Midrashim? What were the certain things we had? Go ahead. What? Bris Milo is a good one. Give me another one that we had. Kept our names. Now, you're going to go into like the chumras that they end up having, which is true. Mm-hmm. Kept our names, kept whatever it is. And those the things that they did themselves. But I mean more like the merits that they had, not specifically them, but all together. Bris Milah is a good one, even though not everybody did Bris Milah, but some of them were able to do Bris Milah. But how about this? They had this chus that they were going to accept the Torah. So the Medrash says, because God knew they were going to accept the Torah, therefore he wanted them to leave Mitzrayim. They had chus avos, right? The avos had allowed them to leave Mitzrayim. Once they had the Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, how great they were able to leave Mitzrayim. Obviously, Bris Milah itself. Not only that, but there's not only the Avos, there's also Mekapetz Alek Vos, is referring to the Moses as well. That refers to as well. There's other Midrashim. Our Amunah and a Kaddish Baruch Hu obviously is going to be up there as well. The Psukim says that we cried out to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and we asked the Kaddish Baruch Hu, V'yitz'aku al Hashem, we cried out to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, we were saved because we cried out. So what do we answer? We're saying, what is our schus at the end of the day? What is our schus to be able to get us saved? So Echad Miyodea. Who knows one schus? The answer is Echad Miyodea. Echad Elokeinu Shebashamayim Va'aretz. The fact that we had Emunah and a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's what allowed us to be able to be saved. Shnai Miyodea. What was the reason why we left? So this really applies to Shnayim, Chamisha, Shisha, and Asara. Who knows those? 2, 5, 6, and 10 are all the merits of the Torah. You have 2 being the Luchos of Bris, the 10 being the Seres Adibros. Both are connected to one another. You have the 5 books of Moses, and you have the 6 Sidrei Mishnah. And all of those were referring to Torah. That was the schus that we had in order to be able to leave. Fine. 3 and 4 are the Avos and the Imos. From the schus of the Avos and the Imos, therefore we were able to leave. 7 is Shabbos, because of the schus of Shabbos. Yet another Medrash, which I didn't mention earlier, is another reason why we got to leave. 8 is Bris Mila, so we're able to leave because of that. I'm assuming that connects with 9, which is Yarche later, or maybe that refers to Taras Mishpacha in some way, shape, or form, and that's the reason why it goes through. 11 and 12 are the Shvatim. The schus of the Shvatim themselves also helped us. 11 and 12 are the stars as well as the Shvatim themselves. And number 13 is the davening that Bnei Yisrael had, that they cried out to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and therefore they were answered. And that's the idea behind it. And it wasn't just passive. It was things that they worked on themselves to be able to do to make themselves better, obviously with not changing their clothing or their language or their names or anything like that. So what are we saying at the end of the Seder? What do we bring up Echem Yodea for? So the idea would be, the reason why we're doing this, because these are all the schuyos that are mentioned for Klal Yisrael as to why they left Mitzrayim. All of this would work in order to be able to save us out of Mitzrayim itself. Now, Rav Rimon, he's an author within Moser Rav Kook. The Moser Rav Kook Haggadah was written by Rav Rimon. So he says, by the time we reach this part of the Seder, it should be that you can look at the entire world and see God in it. If you've done the Seder correctly, if you've done everything in the right way, then by the end of the Seder, you should be able to look at everything and say, of course there's a God. It's not like, oh, maybe there's a natural world and maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu created originally, but then he stepped out. No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved in everything. If I did the Seder correctly with everything there, then we went through, we were slaves, we were freed by God, therefore we have all these mitzvos, and we have everything else because of that. That's the idea, says Rav Rimon. It should be that you see Yetzias Mitzrayim and everything in the world in a different light. Not everybody is zocher to that, but we, at least, we know that we should be working on ourselves and trying to internalize the message of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us. So at the end of the day, when you get up to Echem Yodea, it should get to the point where you look at Echem Yodea and you just think, in number one, you just think HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you get to 2, you think the Luchos HaBris. When you get to 3, you think the Avos. That should be your automatic thinking, because your mindset right now is repeating again and again the refrain that God is the one who created the heavens and the earth. And you say it over and over and over again. Rav Avram Shor says from his father, the Or Gedal Yahu, that if a person is mekasher to Ruchnius, he ties himself up to Ruchnius, then every time he sees the color of Tcheles, he's going to think of the Kisei HaKavod. In other words, he sees the sky, he doesn't see a sky, he sees Kisei HaKavod. He sees an ocean, he thinks Kisei HaKavod. He sees Tzitzis, he thinks to himself, Kisei HaKavod. If a person is connected to Ruchnius in such a fashion, that's what's going to happen. But unfortunately, if a person is connected to Gashmias, and that's where his world is, everything reminds him of just another food. Like, oh, I remember when I ate that. I remember when that happened. Like, when I was younger, I used to watch a TV show that I'm sure people have heard of before, The Simpsons. So I haven't seen it since 1997. It's still on the air, which is absolutely amazing to me. It wasn't that good, but I loved it, and I used to watch it all the time. And it used to be that every time I'd see something when I was learning, I would be able to connect it back to a Simpsons. I'd be able to say, like, oh, that's because, and I'd be able to connect it back there. Because when you really love something, and it's all in your head, right, then that's the thing that you connect everything back to. It reminds you of a joke. It reminds you of a famous saying, a pithy saying. It reminds you of something like that. It should be the opposite. And the way the Or Gedal Yahu was saying it is, if you're mekasher to Gashmias, if you're connected to Gashmias, then you can remember Gashmias when you're doing something ruchni. And that's why in our Shemona Esrei, we sometimes get distracted by other things, because our head is rolling on, even though we're supposed to be connected to what the sitter is saying in front of us, we're thinking about something else entirely. On the other hand, if we're connected to Ruchnius, and every time you see the number one, it's not, and I don't know, like a jersey number. Like, I know Derek Rose was one, but I don't know if he's still playing anything right now. But like, number one, you don't think of a baseball player whose jersey is number one. You think of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's that. You don't think of number two of anything else other than the Luchos. That's what it becomes. That's the idea that Or Gedal Yahu is saying. On the night of the Seder, you're purifying yourself to such a point where you can't think of anything else. Where Vermilion is like, yeah, you should build yourself up to this. Rav Shor is saying, it should only be this. There's nothing else there. You think your whole life is all about this. And if you think of anything else, if that number leads you to think about anything else, then you lost. You missed out on this. That's the idea behind it. And that's the idea of why we don't even have Kriya Shema Al Amita on the night of Leil Pasach. Because Leil Pasach, you don't have to worry about anything. You're not connected to anything else. You are purely Ruchni. That's the idea behind it. Similarly, the Belzer Rebbe, Rav Yisachar Dov, says it's the Seder that brings about a public declaration of the 13 numbers. It's like a wealthy man who is generally very quiet and unassuming about all the wealth that he has, but all of a sudden it comes to a day where he gets drunk. He drinks a little bit too much, and he goes around and starts talking to people and starts saying, hey, you wouldn't believe what I have. I have all this gold and all this silver and all this everything. And he says it out, not because he wants to, but he's uninhibited. He's got all of his... He's got something that's allowing him to say something that he really didn't want to say in the first place. And that's what happens by this type of guy. And by us, after having the four cups of wine and thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu over and over, it's almost like we're drunk. We're drunk, not literally, hopefully, by this time. But you're sitting there and you're like, this is absolutely amazing. We reveal the wealth that we possess and we're counting it out. We say we have HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have the Luchos, we have the Avos, we have the Mos, we have the Torah, we have Torah Shebal Peh, and we keep going because it's amazing all this stuff that we have, says the Rebbe, that's what it should be like. It's like we can't stop talking about everything we have. We just want to go on and on and on and on about all the great things that God has given us. That's the idea behind it. And that's really the psychological view, says Rav Sender, the picture of what makes up the worldview of a Jewish person. Hashem, the Luchos, the Avos, the Mos, the Torah, etc. This is the worldview of a Jewish person. It shouldn't be about anything else. Now, we just said the idea behind this, but Rav Wolfson brings down another idea from the Klausenberger Rebbe. He brings a mashal to a wealthy man, counting out his money at the end of the day to see how much he profited. After you finish all the mitzvahs of the night, according to the Vilna Gaon, there are 64 mitzvahs on the night of Leil Seder. I don't know how to count that up. I once tried, and I got up to like 31, and that was like being very liberal about how I was trying to go through things. I don't know how you can get 64, but the Gra says 64 mitzvahs on this night. After you finish everything, your avoda of the night, you finish being the Kohen Gadol, sitting there and going through the Seder over, and you have it in your head, you know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has saved you. After that, done, you finish everything, you were able to do everything you did, you sit back and count the profit that you gained. And that's the basis behind this piyut. So in other words, this the other way of looking at it, we just said from the Belzer Rebbe, that you do this public declaration like a rich man who just got drunk and just spews it forth as if you should sit down and say, let me sit back and relax and go over everything. One of the smartest things that someone ever told me is that at the end of when you speak, go over a little bit about everything you just said. Just say like a little, a paragraph, a sentence summarizing everything you just said. Because sometimes people might remember the end, they might remember like one part, but they're not going to remember the whole flow of everything that happened. So I've tried to do it. At the very end of when I speak, I try to make sure that I say something that's like, so what do? We said, etc., all these things. You might not be able to remember it, but at least you go through it one after the other. Says Rav Wolfson, that's what you're doing here. Says Rav Wolfson from the Klausenberger Rebbe, you're trying to go through everything. This is the Rechush Gadol. We're going through every little thing we got and how much more we could get over here. There was amazing stuff they were able to get. It's an amazing, amazing idea. And the Haggadah with 238 Perushim. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And the Haggadah with 238 Perushim, he says, another reason why we have this song, maybe because something was sitting there gnawing at you the entire time. You're sitting there and you're worried about something and you just didn't know. We're saying, you're sitting at the Seder, and I know this doesn't necessarily apply in America anymore, but we keep saying we're free, right? We say we're free, we're free, we're free, we're free. And you're sitting there like, but I'm not really free. Now, this is more true in Europe about 50, 60, 70 years ago. You can imagine people in the Holocaust saying over the Haggadah on the night of Pesach and saying, we're free? Look at us. Where are we? Why in the world do we consider ourselves free? So there's something that's sitting there and saying, but when is our real Gula coming? Because we're missing something. We're missing something that's there. We therefore sing this song to remind us at the end of the Seder of Echad Miyodea, these are our schusim. These are our schuyos. That at the end of the day, if we're wondering when the Gula is going to come, it will. And why? Because we still believe in God. We still believe the Luchos were given to Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai. We still have schus Avos and the schusimos. We still study Torah. We still study Mishnayos. We still do Shabbos. We still have Bris Milah. We still have Shemot Tishi Archileta, which we're not going to go through, but that's a very strange one. We still have the Asaras Adibros that we understand to be extremely important as Klolin for all the mitzvahs of the Torah, all 613. We believe in our potential, which is the stars. We believe in the Shvatim, that the Shvatim gave us their powers as well. And, of course, the Midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Yud Gimel Midos of Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum Chanun. Through those Chuyos, we're promising you that at the end of the day, we're going to have our Gula Shlema. It's going to happen over there. Maisa Nisim says these are 13 differences between us and the other nations. That although they may believe in whatever they believe in, we believe in one God, period. although they sit there and they think that they have what the Ten Commandments stands for, we really have the Ten Commandments. We really are the ones that keep those Ten Commandments. We're the ones, even though Schus Avos and Schus Imos could apply to the Yishmaelim and possibly to Esav, and there are so many people in the world that could say, well, Avram Avinu is my father as well. Yishmael could say that about Avram. Esav can say that about Avram and Yitzchak. Nonetheless, Kibi Yitzchak Yikari L'Chazara, we're the ones who have the real Schosavos and the real Schosimos. It really happens to us more than anything else. And we're the ones with Hashkacha Pratis, with Scharva Onesh. All the promises that Bnei Yisrael has that were different, it goes through the list. This is what we have more than everybody else. Shabbos, Bris Mila. Non-Jews cannot keep Shabbos. Even if a non-Jew gets a Bris Mila, unless it's for Geirus purposes, he's still called an Arul. Even if a non-Jew is born with a Bris Mila, he's called an Arul, a person who doesn't have a Bris. Because Bris Mila was given to us more than anything else. And I guess you can say when it comes to the Tisha Yarchileda as well, we have Yichus, a genealogy that goes directly back to what we have in Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's the idea of what we have. There's a Zeragut over here, but I'm going to skip it out. Haggadah Arvei Pesachim says that it goes all the way back. Maybe it's deeper. We're saying Echad Miyodea. It's strange, right? On the first day of Bereshis, Vayera Vayivoker, Yom, how does it end off? Yom Echad. The very first day is Echad. Now it should be Yom Rishon. That's the proper wording over there. Why do we call it Echad? And really, that's what the song is all about. What is Echad? And the answer is because Echad is only Ha'olkeinu Shabashamayim Ba'aretz. That's the idea behind it. He goes on and he goes further when it comes to such as this. The Chassam Sofer says something else as well. And I think this is an amazing lesson, a really amazing lesson. Seemingly, Echad Miyodea has nothing to do with Pesach. We've been trying to give answers that sort of like stretch the idea of how Echad Miyodea somehow has to do with Amuna and somehow has to do with some connection to what happens at the end of the Seder itself. But he says like this, Pesach is a chag that should answer all of our issues. Things are not going well for the Jews in Egypt. They're obviously enslaved, they're knocked down, they're treated as garbage, and the Egyptians are taking complete advantage of them and making them work and do everything that's like there. They're on the lowest level of Muna, 49th level of Tumah over there, and they can barely get it out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes out of nowhere, gives them a leader from somewhere that wasn't even in Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu, somewhere else entirely, shepherding sheep for a living for Yisro, who's an Ovid of Odizara, and he comes back to Mitzrayim and saves them at the age of 80, doing crazy wonders in the middle of nowhere and just taking them out. So the idea is that the nations of the world said back then, right, and they continue to say now, that a God who does good things cannot possibly do bad things. That it's impossible. That there must be two gods. There was a God who enslaved the Jews and another God that saved the Jews. The God that enslaved the Jews did evil to them and caused them to have all this bad, and that's that. The Satan, so to speak, made them have all this evil. And then the real God or the good God came and like took them out, and that was that. And the answer is not at all. After we saw the Makos, how it affected the Egyptians and hurt the Egyptians badly, hit them down. And by us, it healed us, says the Chassam Sofer. We saw from the Makos how awesome HaKadosh Baruch Hu was. That he's a combination of good and bad together. That it's not there's one part of God that's good and one part of God that's bad. That everything within the bad is also good, and even the good has an aspect of bad to it. Every time someone wins the lottery, that means millions of other people didn't win. You realize that? Every time that you end up making a little bit of money, where do you think that money's coming from? Money is a finite thing. That means other people lost money. Other people didn't get it. Within every bit of good, of course, there's something bad. As Zelu Mazet Aso Alokim, says the Chassam Sofer, within every bit of good, there's always something that seems to be the opposite, that seems to be bad. And therefore, within everything, there's good and bad that go together. And they work together. And sometimes we deserve that good, and sometimes we deserve that bad. And we work together to make sure that everything, even the bad, we can turn into good. We can see it as good, find it as something that can become even better and make it even greater. What's up, Dave?
Some way, shape, or form, that's fine. But there are certain things, like not everything is zero-sum game. Not all financial markets are zero-sum, that somebody wins, somebody
okay,
wins.
I understand.
Sometimes there's expansion.
Granted, yes. I'm saying in a very generic form, or general form, right, when there are specifics to this case in which, yes, there are times where it's only good for everyone in the world and not bad for anything. If we really look at it, if we really wanted to say something, it's possible for something to be like that. It's very hard to explain everything. But it could be that there's one thing or one animal or one part of the ground that gets affected badly by something good that happens. Or even like a hurricane, although it's extremely horrible for thousands, millions of people. I don't want to think of it this way, and this is not the way that a person should look at everything. But meanwhile, one person is making a ton of money from all the efforts and the saving and the planes that he's renting out, the food that he's serving. Somebody is making money off that. Yeah. Again, you don't want to look at it as like opportunist, you know, like all of a sudden this guy's making, but that's the idea. What I'm trying to say is that even within the great evil, there still is something good. And we don't understand it fully, but the concept is there.
We used that before, like World War II, yes, there was a war machine that obviously
yes. Yes, yes, 100%. There were people, unfortunately, that gained from it, right? But that happens. And therefore, within everything, there's an idea behind it. And we're hinting that here in the end of the song, is that Pesach influenced our thinking. It made us start thinking that, no, Echad Elokeinu Shebashamayim Ba'aretz. We started thinking that maybe there's two out there. There's a God and there's something else. And that there's somebody that's evil and somebody that's good. And sometimes they work together, sometimes they don't. No, Echad Elokeinu Shebashamayim Ba'aretz. And we keep repeating it again and again and again for this idea. Now, to speak in this term, sometime after the First World War, the Lithuanian government had made a rule. The rule is that every single person, every kid, had to go to school, had to go to a public school, meaning a school that was going to teach secular subjects along with everything else. So they forced all the Jewish children to be in the public schools during the day, and that if they wanted to, they could learn other things at night. But they were together with boys and girls together, Jews and non-Jews in the same classroom. And for many of the Jews that were there, that was unacceptable. They couldn't accept it. They didn't want to be with everybody else there. They wanted to have their own schooling. Yes, they could have their private lessons at night. That just wasn't good enough for them. So one of the people who was close with people in the government was the Panovich Rav. At the time, Yosef Shalom Kahaneman. He tried his hardest to be able to speak to people and tell them, right, that there's a difference. We want to have different schooling for our kids. We'll still teach them these secular subjects, the ones that we have, mathematics and your language, etc., right, sciences, etc. But we want to teach. We want to do it in our form because our schools are important to have for our kids to be able to get together and have it together. So one of the senators, I don't know what they had back then, one of the people, the representatives of the government, said to Rav Chanan, he said, I don't understand. It just doesn't make any sense to you. Why would you want to I understand why you want to learn your Hebrew curriculum, your learning and your Torah, etc. I understand that. That I get why you want to do that within your school system. I get that and that I understand. But he said, it doesn't make any sense. Why would you want to separate them for secular subjects? Is mathematics any different for you than it is for the non-Jews? Like, what difference does it make? Is there any difference between them? So he said, the Rav said, that's an excellent example. He said, there is a difference. Jews count differently from the other nations of the world. Now, this is an interesting line. He said, what do you mean? Said the Lithuanian senator, whatever it was, the representative. So he said, what number do you start counting from? And the guy said, we start from zero. To which Rav Chanan said, we start from one. Echad Elokeinu Shebashamayim Ba'aretz. Now, I don't know. If I would ask anybody nowadays, when do you start counting? I don't know if anybody would start from zero. Can you think of anybody that would start from zero?
Programmers.
I would ask you, from a programmer? They're not human. They're human? Okay, so, but programmers, come on. No, but is there anybody, there's no way, I just wouldn't have thought that. Like, if I would ask anybody, start counting, I don't remember Sesame Street going zero, and then one, and then two. I'm almost positive that Sesame Street started from one. I'm not positive, it's been a long time, longer than The Simpsons, but I'm pretty positive. I'm like 16% positive that they didn't start from a zero itself. Yeah. Agreed. No, but that's the first year. Yeah, it starts at zero, but it's first year. I do. I agree with it. But his idea was start counting from the number one, and that's how we start counting. We never start from Ephes, which means nothing. We start from one, and that's how it goes through. It's a very interesting line. I believe in the era, you know, in the old abacus, or when they used to use abacuses for calculating, etc., with the way they did it, there is no zero. There's no way to add on zero. Like in the Arabic type of calculations, there was no zero. I'm assuming that was influenced by our thinking. It's possible that they had that on their own and that we had that as well, right? I'm not sure. But the concept is 100% true. Reb Leiv Lekovner, he was a student of Reb Chaim of Lajin, who said he could pass straight from the Gemara without doing Shulchan Aruch, etc. He said, I can prove that God exists, right? Echad Elokeinu Shebashamayim Ba'aretz. I can prove that God exists. He said, how? He said, the Rambam says in the beginning of Yad HaChazakah, right, that the first thing a person has to know and he has to realize and believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, the Ravid, we know, Rav Avram ben David, the third, he argues in the Rambam in anywhere where there's an argument to make. If there's somebody who argues with the Rambam, the Ravid is going to mention and say, there's a problem with this Rambam. The Ravid doesn't argue over here. So he says, L'kuli Alma must be that everyone agrees that God exists and that God really is in the world. Because otherwise, how could the Ravid have left that and left the Rambam? It must be that everybody agrees that everybody's there and everybody holds the same, that there really is a God in the world. It's a good proof, right? It's a really good proof. I think that's pretty obvious. Rabbi Sender makes a really unique observation. And we don't have that much time, so I think I'm going to skip most of it over here. It's a really good one, though. I don't want to go... And I'm going to skip something else. I'll skip something else that's right over here. Rusender makes an observation here. I don't think I've seen this ever before. We have an order to the Torah, right? The five books of the Torah and the six books of Mishnah, six Siddur on the Mishnah, etc., right? So why do they have to be divided up in such a fashion? Why wasn't it just one book of Torah? Or one Seder of Mishnayos? Why did it have to be five and six? I'm not asking about the numbers, why five instead of six or six instead of seven. I'm really asking, like, what's the pshat behind the five that specifically were split up in such a way, right, in this way, whatever, and when it comes to Torah Shabbat Chassav and Torah Shabbat Peh as well. So Mishnah and Pirkei Avos. So Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, you probably recognize, it says that there are five kinyanim that God has in this world. Now, seemingly, it means like this. God acquired five things in the world. What were the five things that God acquired in the world? So number one is Torah. Number two is Avram Avinu. Number three is Yisrael. Number four is the Beis HaMikdash. Number five is Shamayim. Those are the five acquisitions that God made in this world. The Radamsker, that's the Tiferet Shlomo, he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing us five ways of getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what these five things stand for. He knows that not everybody's going to be able to be a Talmud Chacham sitting and learning all day long. Some people are going to find God by looking up to the heavens and seeing nature on earth and finding God within nature. That's the Shamayim. That's the idea behind it. There are other people who are going to get it from learning Torah. They love learning Torah. They want to learn Torah more and more. Those are the people that find God through the Torah itself. Other people find God not through Torah and not through their observations, but rather through a chesed. They're so kind and they help other people, and eventually they get closer to a Kadosh Baruch Hu using their chesed and doing stuff like that. Some are rigid to tradition, and they do it because of their connection to Klal Yisrael and being as a whole, one big nation together that all works together as one. And the fifth one is through tefillah itself. Now, all of them, tefillah would be referring to the Beis HaMikdash. All of these refer to the five Svarim over here. Bereishis is Shamayim, and finding God through observation and seeing things in the world the way that Avraham Avinu did, as well as, I guess, Adam and Noach in some way, shape, or form. Shmos is referring to Torah, because that's when we receive the Torah, and especially the first laws that go through. Vayikra is referring to the Beis HaMikdash, obviously all the Korbanos in Vayikra itself, and that refers to our power of tefillah and our ability to daven, etc., and connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that way. Bamidbar is referring to Bnei Yisrael, our travels, our history, and our connection into the past, which helps these types of people connect as well. And Dvarim is about doing mitzvahs and chesed, helping one another and trying to be there, because that's really all about Ben Adam L'Chavero throughout Dvarim, this idea of Moshe Rabbeinu helping out the people, giving Moshe to the people, and then, etc., people doing one to the other. Now, we know that Tanayim can argue on Amorayim. And Amorayim cannot argue on, I should say the other way, Amorayim cannot argue on Tanayim, Gaonim cannot argue on Amorayim, Savorayim cannot argue on, well, it should go the other way, Savorayim after the Amorayim, and Gaonim on the Savorayim, Rishonim cannot argue on Gaonim. So it's strange. How do we know that? How do we know that Tanayim and Amorayim can't mix? That Amorayim are not allowed to argue on Tanayim? So there's a Kesef Mishnah in Hilchos Mamarin. It's in Perek Beis Halacha Aleph, in which it says that there was a decision made that Klal Yisrael as a whole, the Amorayim got together at some point. This seems to be in the times of Reb Chiya or a little bit later. They said, we are not going to argue in the previous generation of Psak. They saw a precipitous jump from where it was, where the Tanayim were, and where they were that time. And they said, we're just not the same. We just can't do it. We can't argue the same way that they did. So they said, no longer can we argue on anybody above us, because we don't understand them and we can't get there. There's no way for us to be able to do it. Yeah.
So what does that carry over to all generations?
I think they kept making it. They made it at the end of the Amorayim by the Savorayim. They made it at the end of the Savorayim by the Gaonim. By the end of the Gaonim for the Rishonim, there were people that got together. And I think that's the reason why there's no real break by the Achronim. By the Achronim from some point, probably around the Shulchan Aruch and on. There's never really been a break. Because you haven't had a bunch of people that say, we're not going to argue on the people in front of us. I would assume that should have happened after the Vilna Gaon. I would assume that would have happened maybe after Rabbi Kiva Eger, but it never happened. So it's really like Achronim all the way through. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman said this was necessary because there were some people in each one of these later generations that could argue on the previous generations, but didn't. Like people on the level of the Vilna Gaon, who they claim was like a Rishon, or of Haigon, who they claim was almost like an Amora. People like that, you'd think they'd be able to argue, but we don't. And the process of this song that goes all the way through to explain to us what the five books of Torah are and everything like that allows us to understand that there's a level to go through, that we go through from level to level to level, and it doesn't go straight the other way around. There's stuff about eight that I'm going to skip over here. There's stuff about Rav Shmuel of Nicholsburg, a tremendous story over here. There's a Rav Rimon regarding the 11 and the 12. But let's end with this, and I think this will be our last thing over here. Who doesn't know?
I'm sorry. The
Yerida of the Doros. Yerida Doros, yeah. That Yerida Doros was stopped at one point. But there's still...
The decision that they came up with, that the Tanayim came up with about not arguing from
Marayim, yeah.
Was that... Did they need to say that, or was it understood that
there was Yerida Doros? There was Yerida Doros. When they saw it, that's when they made this decision. I think this precipitated that decision.
Every level needed to reinstitute that?
I don't think so. I think it was more like, in hindsight, they saw it and they decided this is what we're going to do. That seems like, that, at least from the Beis Yosef, from the Kesef Mishnah, it seems like that's what they did. They said they're not going to be able to do it. I'm sorry?
Probably
the greatest people of the generation.
The greatest scholars? Or
I would assume the people that led the generation. I would assume the greatest scholars. You know, like something like that. The Kesef Mishnah said it. Yeah. Yeah, then you could. Right, then you'd be able to. So who doesn't know? And we'll end with this idea from Shlomo Wallach. Who doesn't know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one? Like, is there anybody out there that's really arguing and it's like, who knows one? And is anybody saying like, I don't know. Who is that guy who's saying I don't know? And the answer is, yes. Malachim. We think of angels as being greater than us. And higher than us, and higher levels, and greater than us in all these different ways. But the truth is, we are so much greater than them in so many ways. Because of their brilliance that the Malachim have, Malachim do not understand God's oneness as we do. We understand Hashem's oneness because we have two missions in life. I could do many, many different things, and I could have more than one mission in this world. A Malach only has one mission. Who knows one? Malachim think they're one. They don't understand the concept of duplicity. They don't get the idea of being able to be complex and have different parts. They only have one leg. What that means is they only stand on one idea. That's the one thing that they have, and there's nothing more than that. We, on the other hand, have two legs. We're able to do two things at once. We're able to do three things at once, except for walk and chew gum, which is very difficult for most people. But other than that, you've never tried? Try it. You trip up, don't blame me. But other than that, it seems like Malachim don't have that ability while we do. So when we say we understand God is one, what that means is that we look at all the complexities of life and we can see HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being the one who puts them all together. Malachim have an inability to do that. They can't see anything as more than one. So who knows one? The Malachim think they're one. They think they're one. They don't understand the way that we do, the uniqueness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu more than anybody else. And that's the concept behind it. Through our Tzelem Elokim, our image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our abilities, we are greater than Melachim in that way. Dov, yeah.
Well, so technically they do know one because they think they're one.
But they're wrong. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only one. You know what I'm saying? Like, they think they're one and they're wrong about it, which shows that they're off when it comes to that. That's true, but they don't have a doubt that there's a God, but they don't understand one. They don't get what one is because they think they're one. They're not, though, because they connect with other Malachim. There's no such thing as just one when it comes to stuff like that. For example, I'm going to give a quick example. Right? We all have a machlokas. Michal, Rafal, and Gabriel went to go visit Avram Avinu, right? Each one had a job. What was Rafal's job?
To heal
Avram Avinu, right? What was Michal's job? To tell Sarimino that she was going to have a baby, right? What was Gabriel's job? Destroy Sodom. Who saved Lot? This is Machlokas. Michal or Rafal, right? Between Rashi and Tosus over there in Bava Metzia, it's either Michal or Rafal. Wait, I thought they can only have one job. The answer is, you're right, they can have one job, but it becomes a little complicated. And you can like go off and like do more than one thing because it's sort of in the same category. That's not one. They think they're one. I only have one job. I do Mikael, who is like God. I show everybody who is like God. Gabriel, I do the Gvura of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rafael, I heal, because that's what I got. They think they're one, but they're not. They're complex. They just think that they're one. That's the concept. The idea is, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts everything all in one together, and it's only one when it comes to that. And if that's so, then there's only two. Who knows two? Only us, not the Malachim. The Malachim don't get the Luchos. And the reason why they don't get the Luchos is because they cannot understand what it means to keep most of the Torah. Look at those Aseres Adibros. How in the world are they supposed to keep Shabbos? They don't do Malacha. How are they supposed to honor their parents? They don't have parents. How are they supposed to say, don't make any idols? They have no concept of making an idol. There's nothing there for them. Don't murder, there's no murder. Don't commit adultery, there's no such thing. The whole concept of the Aseret HaDibros, the Luchos, doesn't apply to them. Avos, Imaos, all of these things don't apply to them. Malachim don't have it. So when we say, who knows one, who knows two, we're showing our greatness. That human beings are greater than Malachim, that we have something that they don't have. They might be greater than us in their intellect, in their abilities, in their conceptually they're great. We are greater. That's the idea of what's happening here. And the Dubna Magid says, an unbelievable idea. Mashal to a man who owned a factory and he hired a foreman. So this foreman, right, was this guy in charge and that was that. Soon, he was planning on, you know, raising him up. He was going to say to him, you know, you're going to be my next, you know, I'm going to raise you up to the next level. I'm going to give you a little bit of a raise. Then all of a sudden, this new guy came in and the guy, the boss, was totally enthralled. This guy is unbelievable. He's unbelievable. So eventually, when there was a promotion to be made, he gave it to this new guy over the old foreman. So the foreman came to the boss and he said, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? And the boss said, listen, you've done a great job, but this guy is nothing like you. His abilities are way greater than you. He said, why? Well, what's the difference between the two of us? So the boss thought for a moment and he said, okay, you know what? I'll show you. You're going to have to see it yourself. There's a guy that's passing our factory right now. I just saw the window. He's passing our factory right now. Go out and ask him what kind of merchandise he has. So the guy runs out. The foreman runs out. He goes and asks him what kind of merchandise he has. He comes back and he tells the boss, he's got, I don't know, leather skins. So he said, okay, go back out and go ask him, how much are the leather skins, right? How much are they? So the guy runs out. Now he's like a little bit down the block. He runs out. He goes, gets them, right? He comes back and he says, he's selling leather skins for $50 per box. He said, okay, well, I want you to go out there and just say, is there any way that he can go any cheaper? So the guy went back, ran back after him. Now he's a little bit further on. And he's like, is there any way to ask the question? Comes back and he's like, yeah, he would go a little bit cheaper. He'll go like $40 a box, right? He's like, okay. Calls the other guy in, the new guy. Calls a new guy in and he says, there's a guy down the block who just passed by in a wagon. Go find out what's going on with him. So the guy goes out, leaves for like 5-10 minutes, comes back and he goes back to the boss and he says, okay, the guy was carrying skins. He was selling for $50 a box, but I think we can bargain him down to $35 to $40 a box. If we buy this box of skins, we can use it for X, Y, and Z, and I think we can make a profit in these different ways. If we end up doing that, right, I think that'll be really worth it to us. I told him to wait there and wait for my answer so that I could speak to you first before I decided to buy. What do you think? He says to the boss. The boss turns to the foreman and says, do you see the difference here? I had to keep telling you to go back, and you never found out the information that I needed, and you never told him to do what I wanted you to do. He, from just a few words from me, understood everything he needed to do and did it, and came back to me. He said to the foreman, he's like, I like you, you're a great guy, but you don't have the same abilities as that. The foreman, right, is obviously Malachim, and we are that new guy who comes into play. The foreman, the Malachim, know exactly what to do. You tell me to do something, I'm going to go do it. And he's right. He's going to do it. He's going to do exactly as I say. But that's not what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. He wants you to be able to figure out what to do from context and be able to figure it out for yourself. And then do it on your own. He doesn't want you to be able to just do things just on because that's the way things are.
So does that mean that a guy like
Eliyahu
was demoted?
No, because Eliyahu Navi became the highest form in which he took on the aspect of the Malachim while still retaining his human Bechira. That's the awesomeness of Eliyahu HaNavi, where he can span both worlds. He could be up there like a Malach in his awesomeness and yet still be down on earth and dealing with our dealings and be the Mevaser Tov for Klal Yisrael. So you have a concept. Then they had the ability to have Bechira and they messed up in their Bechira. That's the concept of Malachim coming down. The idea behind all that, says the Dubna Magid, the concept, conceptually, Malachim are awesome, but they don't get it. We get it, and we're awesomer. That's a real word. And we are greater in that fashion. And if we do it correctly, we can be... And that's the message behind Echa Miyodea. The Malachim don't get it. We do. So we have to use our abilities to become greater and better and to be able to improve ourselves to be the level of where we got everything we're supposed to have. Guys, if we look through all the way through, so we asked, what was the purpose of Echa Miyodea? Why did we have Echa Miyodea over here? So we start off with Rav Sender from Shalmar Wartheimer, the number 13. We went through the bunch of Midrashim that went through the Sklius of Klal Yisrael, Rav Rimon, Rav Shur, and the Belzer Rebbe and Rav Sender that went again through that whole thing. We mentioned the Maisa Nisim that goes through all the 13 differences between us and the other nations. We mentioned the Chassam Sofer, a children's song, that it's going to be a little bit different. We said the uniqueness of the 5 and the 6. And finally, this idea from Shalom Wallach as to the Malachim versus us. We'll stop with there, guys. Have a